Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we'll have a special report on an investigation by East County Magazine into the closure of migrant shelters for children, including two in East County. The Trump administration has dropped a Biden-era lawsuit against the operator of those shelters that alleged serious sexual abuse of children at some of them. And yet the Trump administration refuses to reveal where the children are now. We'll also tell you how to apply to be a Lemon Grove council member as the city strives to fill a vacancy left by the death of council member Steve Fayai. Then we'll have an in-depth interview with Suzanne Till. She's a military veteran, teacher, local water board member, and Democrat who is running for the 48th Congressional District against Congressman Daryl Issa, whose district may become competitive if Governor Newsom's redistricting plan is approved by voters. We'll share updates on the Padres, who now have a strong shot at postseason play, plus hear about the county's Clear the Shelter Month that makes August a great time to adopt a pet. And finally, from California News Service, hear about a court ruling that comes as welcome news for the owners of rooftop solar. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is John Tidwell with a special report from East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice. The federal government has shut down sites that had been housing unaccompanied immigrant children in El Cajon and Lemon Grove since the first Trump administration, an East County Magazine investigation reveals. Both facilities were run by Southwest Key Programs, a nonprofit that has faced serious allegations, including sexual abuse of children, at some of the 27 facilities it operated in Texas, Arizona, and California. El Cajon City Manager Graham Mitchell told the City Council and staff on August 13th via email that the nation's largest provider of housing and services for unaccompanied minors has left the city. Mitchell said Southwest Key notified the city that it lost federal funding and was shutting down. The El Cajon site had housed boys. A similar site in Lemon Grove housed migrant girls. Lemon Grove City Manager Lydia Romero told East County Magazine that she had not received word that Southwest Key's site in Lemon Grove had closed, but a call to the organization's office on El Prado Avenue resulted in a disconnected phone line. The El Cajon facility drew scrutiny in 2018 during the Trump-era separation of migrant children from families when protesters demonstrated outside the facility. Democratic congressional members Juan Vargas and Susan Davis visited the site amid allegations of sexual abuse, neglect, and runaways at U.S.-run facilities operated by Southwest Key. In response to an inquiry from East County Magazine, Southwest Key Programs Chief of Staff Christina Cantu states, Southwest Key Programs has received official notice from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Administration of Children and Families, that are grants offering residential shelter services for unaccompanied children with the Office of Refugee Resettlement have concluded. The email adds, Southwest Key Programs is committed to ensuring an orderly transition in close coordination with our federal partners. Follow-up emails asking where the children in Southwest Key's facilities have been sent were not answered. East County Magazine reached out to the U.S. Department of Justice, where Senior Media Affairs Manager Natalie Baldessari referred East County Magazine to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for comment. But Emily Hilliard, Press Secretary for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, responded to our inquiry with an email stating, as a matter of policy, to protect the privacy and security of unaccompanied alien children referred to us, ORR does not identify the names or locations of shelters. Southwest Key had been operating its 27 shelters through grants from the HHS Office of Refugee Resettlement to care for children who crossed the border without parents or legal guardians in the United States. The operations have lacked adequate oversight. Even congressional members and media were denied access to the Lemon Grove facility housing young girls, for example. In 2024, the Biden administration's Justice Department, led by Attorney General Javier Becerra, filed a lawsuit against Southwest Key, alleging pervasive abuse and even rape of children at multiple facilities. Associated Press reported, though no specific abuse cases were cited at the El Cajon or Lemon Grove sites. The Biden-era lawsuit alleged that Southwest Key, through its employees, subjected unaccompanied immigrant children in its care to unlawful sexual harassment and abuse. The lawsuit stated that from at least 2015 through at least 2023, multiple Southwest Key employees have subjected unaccompanied children in their care to repeated and unwelcome sexual abuse, harassment, and misconduct, and a hostile housing environment, including severe sexual abuse and rape, solicitation of sex acts, solicitation of nude photos, entreaties for sexual inappropriate relationships, sexual comments and gestures, leering, and inappropriate touching. In some cases, the suit stated, Southwest Key employees threatened children to maintain their silence. In harassing these children, these Southwest Key employees exploited the children's vulnerabilities, language barriers, and distance from family and loved ones. Despite knowledge of these severe and pervasive harms, Southwest Key failed to take appropriate action to protect the children in its care. But the Trump administration in March inexplicably dropped the lawsuit against Southwest Key. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that the administration would move the children to other locations as the Trump administration works to end the tragedy of human trafficking and the appalling abuse of innocence, Kennedy said. A March press release from the Department of Justice states that due to these concerns, Health and Human Services has decided to stop placement of unaccompanied immigrant children in Southwest Key facilities and to review its grants with the organization. Those grants have now been terminated. Trump's Attorney General Pam Bondi blamed the Biden administration for border policies that she said incentivized bad actors to exploit children and break laws. In fact, however, concerns over migrant children arose during the first Trump administration, which implemented a policy of separating children from parents at the border and also implemented a policy of sending unaccompanied migrant children to the Southwest Key facilities instead of making efforts to reunite them with parents or other family members. The Trump administration reportedly separated more than 4,600 children from their parents, then inexplicably lost track of them. The Biden administration eventually tracked down most and helped reunite about two-thirds of those children with their families. However, about 1,300 of the children taken by ICE during Trump's first term of office have never been found, MSN reported earlier this year. And while the Trump administration turned a blind eye to the serious abuse allegations, the Biden administration filed a lawsuit accusing Southwest Key in an effort to protect the children. Closure of the Southwest Key facilities for migrant children in El Cajon and Lemon Grove raises deeply disturbing questions. Why did the Trump administration drop the lawsuit that could have held abusers responsible for their actions against vulnerable children? How many children remained at these facilities when the decision to shut them down was made? Most important, where are these children now, and who is looking out for their welfare? East County Magazine is reaching out to local congressional members seeking answers.
The city of Lemon Grove is actively seeking applicants to fill the vacant city council seat left by the death of Steve Fayi, who passed away on July 8th after a heart attack. At his August 5th meeting, the Lemon Grove City Council directed staff to open the application process for the appointment of a city council member to fill out the remainder of Fayi's term. The council opted against calling for a special election, which could have cost the city over $250,000. The appointed council member will serve through December 2026. To qualify, you must be a U.S. citizen, at least 18 years of age before the appointment, be a resident and registered to vote in the city of Lemon Grove, and may not have been convicted of certain serious felony crimes, such as bribery, embezzlement, extortion, theft of public funds, perjury, or conspiracy to commit any of those crimes. It's a part-time position, compensated at $803 a month plus benefits. The application period is open now and runs through September 4th. Applications are available at the City Clerk's office at Lemon Grove City Hall or online at lemongrove.ca.gov. After the application period closes, city staff will verify each applicant's eligibility. All qualified applicants will have 3 minutes to present their qualifications during interviews on September 16th at 6 p.m. at the Lemon Grove City Council chambers. A question and answer session may follow, after which the City Council may make an appointment during that September 16th meeting, or schedule further consideration at a later date. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today I am very honored to have as our special guest Suzanne Till. She is a Democrat running against Republican Congressman Daryl Issa in the 48th Congressional District. She is a Marine Corps veteran, a self-described Hellcat, we'll explain about that, an elected member of the Padre Dam Municipal Water District Board of Directors, and she holds a PhD in water. Her dad was a teacher and El Cap High School football coach. Her mom was an immigrant who fled Germany during World War II. Suzanne is also a teacher, as well as a coach who helped lead the Santana girls basketball team to a CIF championship this year. Go Santana.
Go Sultans, yes.
There you go. And she says she's running on a platform of affordable housing, water, and energy issues, and she wants to see working class people serving in Congress, not millionaires and billionaires like Daryl Issa. So, Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, we're pleased to have you. So, can you start by telling us what made you decide to run for Congress in this district?
Okay. This actually goes back to 2020. And in 2020, I was teaching college level geography and earth science classes and at my high school, Modern Day Catholic High School, Go Crusaders. Mm-hmm. And my students were like saying, Dr. Till, you talk about climate change, you talk about water problems. Why don't you do something about it? So then I said, OK, we'll run. And so I entered in with no expectations. I will say the Democratic Party at that time did a really good job training candidates. So I got some good training. Mm-hmm. I'm also a data scientist. So I use geographic information systems to contact and interact with voters as part of our canvassing. Mm-hmm. I walked the district. This is no water elected official in Padre Dam has ever walked the district.
Wow. And,
yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's a very sprawling district. So that's quite an accomplishment, Suzanne.
Right, right. And we walked it and then we won by 17 percentage points. When I was elected at my, you know, swearing in, mm-hmm. I said, I'm dedicating this whole election and my work to the youth of East County, because I know that they will have to face climate change.
And we're certainly seeing the impacts of it already with these more and more devastating wildfires all over the place, you know, worse and worse hurricanes and floods in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. What used to be considered a 100-year flood or a 100-year fire, these things are happening, you know, every few years now. So,
right. And it's happening here. Mm-hmm. The Colorado River, where we get 70% of our water, is drying up. It is so low in Lake Powell that they hit something known as Deadpool.
Yes.
And what Deadpool means is you can't even run your hydroelectric generators. Yes. And like heat is low. Right. And there's no agreement of how to share that water. So that was one of the things I was thrown into in 2020. And mm-hmm. Luckily we had the people before me start a water purification project. And right when I came in, there was a question of how do we get funding? And I was the only Democrat on the board. And I said, we talk to Gavin Newsom, we go see Joe Biden, we go see everybody. Mm-hmm. And so from that, the board, which is incredible with bipartisanship, We were able to bring in $935 million for a water purification plant that we're going to have at Santee Lakes.
That is fantastic. And I often say it's good to have people of both parties on boards because
Yes.
depending which party's in power, and it might be different at the state and the federal level, you want somebody who has that inside edge and the contacts there who can make that happen.
Well, I think initially when I was elected, there was some hesitancy because I was the first Democrat ever elected to the board, the first woman.
It was the old boys network, yeah.
They didn't say the word climate change. That was hard for them. And I said, we're going to say the word climate change. We're going to talk about drought and be honest. And as even over the last 5 years, the water discharge rates have just declined dramatically in the Colorado River. My fellow Republican elected officials go to these Colorado River Basin conferences in December, and they're like, you're right, Suzanne, we're really at a crisis point. And I said, yes, we are. And we've all come to agreement on that. The other nice thing that we were able to do for that plant, it is powered by clean energy. So that's the other thing that raises people's water rate is energy use. So we are harvesting biofuel from bacteria that break down waste in wastewater, and that is converted into energy, and everything will be self-powered. So it's a win-win.
I need to ask you about how your policies differ, on energy and water issues from Darrell Issa's, as well as what else you consider to be the greatest differences between yourself and Congressman Issa.
So I will say that Darrell has been supportive of trying to get funding for us. But this year, we lost $3 million of a grant. And he did not step in and fight for us at all for that grant. And that was going to go to our East County Advanced Water Purification Plant.
Yeah, and he really hasn't been a supporter of green energy.
No,
It's
and if
like.
you look at the big, beautiful bill, there is nothing there to support clean energy. In fact, I'm very concerned because we want to apply for special tax benefits and grants for this, and I'm really concerned that this could all dry up.
Right,
And if
yeah.
we would run this with SDG&E rates, which we know are going up, your water costs will go up. This is what we're doing to keep costs down.
Yeah, so you would be a fighter, it sounds like, for
Oh, yeah.
keeping, clean, affordable water available here and clean energy as well.
You know, as I travel in the district and I talk about it and people like go down and it's amazing. I encourage people, we're going to open it in 2026, go see a tour. It is just stunning. See this? And Poway's like, we want one. Ramona's like, we want one.
Yeah, Potter
People,
Dam was one
Verona.
we had great foresight. I mean, they've been people out there have been drinking recycled water for years, and it's only
Right.
just now that the rest of the county is catching up to the need for that.
Well, this actually emanated from Orange County, Municipal Water District. They started this, I think, a decade ago. I can't remember exactly. And it's the same process. It is not toilet to tap, by the way. We
No.
purify the water and then we have it sit in a reservoir for a period of time to let the bacteria and the wetlands clear it. And there's so much testing. And then there's the second purification
It's
process.
actually cleaner than that Colorado River water we
It is
get, where
cleaner.
you don't
It
really want
is
to know
cleaner.
everything that's in that
Right.
river water when it comes in here.
Right. And it's going to take plastics out of the water.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, microplastics. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. It's going to take PFAS,
Yeah.
that horrible. Yeah, it's all going away. And
What would you consider your greatest strengths compared to the field of other Democrats that
oh,
are
okay.
running? Obviously, for people, whether they're a Democrat or a declined to state, or maybe a Republican not ha happy with Trump or ISA policies, what would you say to them most differentiates yourself from the other Democrats who are running for the same seat?
Number one, I'm a scientist and I understand science and engineering and I do infrastructure. And that is a basic service that the government must provide. If we don't have water, we don't have an economy, everything fails. If we don't have water to fight fires, everything fails. And I also use data to drive my decisions, and I have a track record of doing that. So the other thing is, I'm an elected official. Our water district serves 125,000 people in the 48th, and we do an excellent job of doing what we do. And so I have experience not only campaigning, but governing. Number three, I really feel I'm a candidate that wants to unite people. I do very well with independents and Republicans. And I feel the Democratic Party is not doing a good enough job trying to bring in more independents and Republicans. And so I was told by the Democratic Party, you're not going to win. Okay, we won in 2020. I was told again in 2024, you don't get money. It's a lost cause out there. And we won by 24 percentage points.
Well, we should mention that Congressman Issa's district is one of the most gerrymandered in the whole state, if not the most gerrymandered.
It's
But that may,
gerrymandered.
but it may change. We're seeing, the Texas gerrymandering there, in that case by Republicans trying to ram through midterm, mid-census redistricting to favor Republicans. And Governor Newsom here has said if Texas does that, then he's going to ask the legislature and the voters of California to approve an initiative that would re do redistricting here. And certainly one of the districts that would be affected by that would be Darrell Issa's district. So it might actually be a competitive district by the time voters get to the polls in this election. I lost my train of thought here on that with the phone interruption. Apologies for
You want to
that.
hear my comments about redistricting and the process?
Absolutely, I do. What do you think about it?
I don't think Gavin Newsom is reaching out and talking to the people here of the 48th. And I don't think he understands the political landscape of the 48th. And the only thing they're looking at is what is the advantage of Democrats to Republicans? They're not thinking about the independents,
Which
which
is
is a
really
huge,
the biggest
it is
voting
the
block
biggest.
now. Yeah.
And they're also looking at not necessarily the best candidate, but who can raise the most money to win.
Yes. Well, and with Darrell Issa,
And
that's
this
a
is part of my candidacy,
yeah.
is I am firmly I w the last time they did a study in Congress of how many millionaires was all the way back in 2012 in Congress. They should do another study now to see who there are.
Yeah, well, we certainly know that Darrell Issa has always been
He's a
one of the richest
multimillionaire.
members of Congress. Yeah, so you're up against
But
that.
this, a lot of this, I think, probably will be driven by money. There's a lot of millionaires waiting. And I've been warned, I've been told by some people of East County, we're very concerned that this is going to get redistricted. I was told this yesterday. And some millionaire will move in. And here you are serving our people, working hard, and it's all going to go to some multimillionaire or somebody else.
So voters really need to be watchful of that. And although I will say that with social media today, now there are ways for candidates who aren't necessarily the richest candidate to get the messages out there. You mean online candidate forums and other things.
I mean,
So
yes, there are other ways to come. That's why we're staying in. Some people are like, how can you beat Del Arce? He is not well liked, I will be honest, not only by Democrats, but by independents and many moderate
yeah, he's
Republicans.
been not showing up at town halls. They've been
Yeah,
dressing up
he is
somebody in a
not well
chicken
liked at
suit,
all.
and having drawing thousands of people there who are
But here's
concerned.
another risk that the Democrats may not understand is if East County especially gets districted somewhere else, and we don't know what's going to happen. There are plenty of good elected moderate Republicans who can come in and take that seat over a Democrat. And I don't think they're thinking about that either.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. Issa ran on a pledge to be a watchdog over the government, and yet his critics have been calling him recently a lapdog for even the most extreme of Donald Trump's policies. We're at a point in time, Suzanne, where a lot of people have been voicing fear about the future of our democracy itself, with the erosion of so many of our rights. I'm wondering how you would criticize, characterize the differences between yourself and Issa on this important issue of protecting our democracy.
Well, maybe we could get into what is a Hellcat, right? A Hellcat is a new kind of, it started in 2018, and these were women with veteran experience or worked in the CIA. They are moderate Democrats. They want to embrace and work with independents and Republicans, and they put country over party. That is me to the core. I put what is best for the 48th over party any day of the week. I will. And I have a consistent record of doing that. I am the most fiscally conservative person on my Padre Dam board. I have never raised the water light, ever.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about fiscal conservative, which has long been a hallmark of the Republican Party. I think that's one of the values that a lot of people, even on the left side of the aisle, have some admiration for. So I would like to ask you, Suzanne, where you stand on tariffs and trade policies. Everybody wanted after this election to see inflation come down, and instead it's actually going up, fueled in large part by these tariffs. What would you do? How do you feel about them, and what would you want done to try to actually bring inflation down?
First, let's talk about how we're treated and viewed in the world. The European Union has the second highest GDP in the world. We're number one. China is third. And I don't understand why we are alienating this very strong economy that supports us and supports democracy and also is an incredible training party,
You're talking about
especially
Europe and the
in,
European Union, yeah.
yeah, the European Union. And we have alienated them. We have. We absolutely have. And we should be forming alliances and have strong trading. Same with Mexico. Mexico is our first largest trading partner. We should have strong alliances with them. Same with Canada. And we're just kind of like wandering around in the world, hitting everybody with a baseball bat.
You're all this bluster of us go take over Canada or take over Greenland.
Right.
It's not
And
productive, is
nobody, there is no level of trust with us anymore. None whatsoever.
It's very disturbing. Speaking of international relations,
Sure.
I wanted to get your thoughts on this summit that President Trump says he's going to hold with Vladimir Putin, the Russian premier, in Alaska over Ukraine. Your views on that whole situation and the summit specifically.
What I criticize with the Republicans is they don't understand history and who is Vladimir Putin and what he stands for. And to have a bromance with an absolute dictator who murders people. He, by the way, Vladimir Putin is the richest person in the world. To adore this person who does not stand up for democracy at all is, again, there's no trust with us because we're not standing against this. Basically, the perception is we've got two big billionaires running the world. So I would have never allowed Vladimir Putin on our own country. And I will say this to Vladimir Putin, I am not your friend. I will never
Yeah.
be your friend. And I will never trust you. I will try and work with you, but I will never do that.
It's
Now,
like that reminds me of the Reagan quote, trust but verify, when he was talking
trust but
about Russia
verify.
and
And I tell
Iran.
you what, Reagan would be turning in his grave right now.
Yeah, I think
Reagan
so.
would be. The way we beat, again, no understanding of history. How do we beat the Soviet Union before? Goodwill throughout the country, spreading the voice of democracy through Voice of America, and great research, great science, great
This
technology. Boom.
president has completely done away with the Voice of America. He's
I know
abolished
that.
it, and he's also abolished, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in this
I know.
country that funds NPR and PBS. So,
Well, this is how I would handle India, for example. So Trump is hangry about India. And he says, I'm going to slap a tariff because that's all he can do. That's only where his brain goes. I wouldn't do that. I would meet with the prime minister and say, why are we doing fossil fuels? You're having heat crisis left and right. You can't air condition your way out of this. Let's work together and let's get some clean energy in India. Let's do this. Let's partner.
There you go.
And I would rather partner with India on clean energy and solar energy, then stuck with China, which is
Yeah,
where we're at right now. We are stuck
exactly.
with China, which, by the way, I want to say this too. The Republicans are saying China doesn't believe in green energy. Baloney. They are completely going solar, wind, hydroelectric. They are full court press.
Fascinating.
We need to pause a moment for station identification. You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And now we return to our interview with Suzanne Till, a candidate running against Daryl Issa in the 48th Congressional District.
I would also like to ask your views on probably the other biggest pressing global issue right now, which is the Israel-Gaza conflict. Can you tell me where you stand on that, and specifically if that differs from Daryl Issa's stance on this issue?
We have a very large Middle Eastern population in the 48th, and I've done a lot of outreach. In fact, some of my girls I coach in basketball, they're Kurdish, and I love them to death.
There you go.
I do believe, and I agree with the Pope, that there are human rights violations going on in Gaza. And I do support current legislation that would not support, not send weapons to Israel. I have nothing against Israel. I am, but I have a problem with Netanyahu. And I have a problem with Hamas. Those are the two where this is going.
It's really the leadership in both of those areas that seems to be the issue. I think certainly everyone I think would empathize with Israel after the horrific terror attacks, the October terror attacks a couple of years ago, and at the
And
same
they were
time,
horrible.
yeah, and
Let's
at the same
just all
time,
agree on that.
your heart goes out when you look at pictures of starving Gazan children and say, can't we do better than this?
I would form an international coalition and work heavily with Europe on this. And Trump is not doing that. He is not. He is just catering to billionaires in Qatar and in Saudi Arabia. Again, we're back to the billionaires. And I think that's the problem with our government right now.
One of the most inflammatory issues on the domestic side of the aisle is immigration. We have seen Donald Trump won on a platform of, calling for the mass deportation of immigrants, although he originally couched that as, getting rid of convicted criminals among the immigrant population. And now we're all seeing that it's gone far beyond that, where he's rounding up even many people who never committed any crime, people who've been here for decades, and even beyond people that cross the border without papers, looking to deport, taking away protected status from, say, Afghan translators who helped our military and were promised protection over here. And now he wants to take that away. So I wanted to get your views on all of this. And once again, if you could contrast, how your views on it may differ from the president's and particularly from Daryl Issa's.
Number one, I think Joe Biden with the open borders didn't work. I do think we need a secure border. We need some security. The number one problem in East County now is the fentanyl crisis, and we need to do that. So that's number one. But number two, and I was explaining this to a Trump supporter the other day, and I was told, well, they're all criminals. How did they get in? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, many of the people here, like my mother's family, are escaping war. If you take away protections for the Afghan community, if you send them back to Afghanistan, they die. They die. And then I hear, well, then they just have to get their act together. And I said, it's much more complicated than that. And Taliban doesn't care about getting right. It's not going to happen.
Yeah,
If
it's like those who fled cartel violence, where
it
cartels in
is. It is
Central
cartel
America were
violence.
threatening their families and threatening to kill them if they wouldn't get involved and sell drugs. I mean, what would any mother do, right? You would take your kids and
Number
get out of there.
two, there's no pathway for anybody right now. Everything is closed down. There was a bipartisan bill that could have opened up an immigration pathway, and that has shut down. So what are we doing is basically saying, yes, we want to deport you. The thing that I will stop immediately is Department of Homeland Security and ICE should not be at our schools, period. And they're ending up at our schools.
Yeah,
And
as a
in
teacher, I'm sure that concerns you.
East County Grossmont Union High School District is currently working with Department of Homeland Security on video surveillance.
Oh my goodness.
I am a teacher. My job is to protect the children, no matter who they are and what they are. And you're not only traumatizing immigrants, you're traumatizing my Latino families. All their children have to now have passports and citizenship documents. They are petrified. Same with the Middle Eastern community.
Shocking.
And I was told this too. Oh, the Middle Eastern community, they're coming out here to enforce their culture on us. And I said, what I'd like you to do is come with me to El Cajon, to the East County Democratic Party meeting. We are diverse. And the Afghans that I work with there are the most patriotic people in the world because they know what democracy, when they know what a dictatorship
Yeah, and
is.
it's a very diverse community also. I mean, for example, the Middle Eastern community actually includes in East County a lot of Chaldean Christians from Iraq who were fleeing,
Chaldeans from Iraq
war
and
and
they're
persecution.
Catholic. And when I go in, we have Chaldeans in Santee, and when I knock on the door and we start talking, and I said, my mother, my family, the Catholics escaped Hitler and Stalin because the Catholics were killed off too. And I said, I understand. I know what this trauma is. And we go into the room and we see the Blessed Mother in the living room, and we have a talk about their beautiful culture that they left. And they keep saying, thank you. We have a place to be because if we would send back the Chaldeans, they would be killed.
It was Christians that were being massacred there under ISIS. So, as a teacher, Suzanne, I wonder if you can comment about President Trump's effort to abolish the Department of Education and roll back, many of the policies and programs and so forth in our public schools as well.
It's already happened. The Grossmont Union High School District already preemptively did it last spring with a mass firing of teachers, counselors, and librarians.
They did.
And they didn't have to, but they did. We were supposed to re receive at the state level $800 million for schools funding that was supposed to arrive July 1st for our school district. Now we've heard, oh, we made a mistake. We're going to send you money. We can't operate schools like this.
And
Schools.
we're talking about the federal government withholding these funds from the
Yes, from
states.
the
Yeah.
state of California.
So it's not the state's fault. The buck stops with the federal
Right.
government
And
on that.
a lot of that is for special education services.
The kids most in
Most,
need.
yes, yeah, for our rising autism population, most of the services they get, the insurance companies drop the ball when your kid turns five and they say, oh, the school district's got it. A lot of that went away. And to expect us to say, oh, you can deal with this last minute is
No, yeah, you
unconscionable.
can't. Yeah, the money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
Speaking of insurance, Suzanne, as a cancer survivor yourself, and congratulations for being in full remission. That's
Oh,
great.
thank you.
Yeah. What are your views on these efforts by the Trump administration to abolish the Affordable Care Act and that big, beautiful budget bill that the Republicans passed and Trump signed? I might add, without a single Democratic vote, that will take away Medicaid coverage for millions of Americans. I mean, what does that mean for people like you who maybe have cancer and are going to die without treatment?
So I'm in that working population that gets count that I was cancer and I'm still working. I'm not eligible for Medicare. This happened to me in 2022. And I was diagnosed with lung cancer. I've never smoked in my life. I'm a total athlete, completely survived. And by the
Wow.
way, more women get breast cancer every year, but more women die of lung cancer. And lung cancer is now attacking women. And it's not even the smokers. And so
Frightening.
when I was diagnosed, I said, I have to get back to work. I know I'm, what am I going to do? And they said, well, we'll try and find you a doctor who takes Medicaid, which kind of sent me the silent question of, we don't even know if we can find you a doctor that'll
Yeah.
take Medicaid. They sent me home to die.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they did. They didn't know what to do, and they just sent me home. So my family flew in, and we had a meeting, and we decided the only way I could live is I get back to work. I was diagnosed on my birthday, August 1st, 2022. I was back in the classroom in a wheelchair teaching mid-September because I
Wow.
knew the alternative was death. Now,
Yeah.
this is 2022. We've just
Awful.
cut $1 trillion from Medicaid.
Yeah, and not
And
everyone has the option to go back to work, or they may be too unhealthy to go back to the
I'm
job they
me,
had.
right? And I had a supportive family. My sister had to take off 6 months from work,
Yes.
to do this. And that impacted her. I don't know if people realize, but 70% of cancer survivors go into medical debt. It is a serious, and there is no safety net.
Yeah,
It's
you can no
poverty.
longer discharge that through bankruptcy like you used to be able to. I had a friend that ran up millions of dollars in debt.
Yeah.
He said he would never in his entire life be able to own a house because they would simply seize it, you know, for
Nope.
to
What if
pay
your
his
kid gets
medical bills. And
cancer?
also a cancer survivor, you know.
And my medication costs $26,000 a year.
Wow.
That keeps me alive. And luckily, I am with the God bless the Catholic Church. They offer great health care. And so when people are like, oh, Suzanne, why don't you quit so you can run your campaign? I'm like, well, then I die,
Yeah,
basically, because there's
exactly.
nothing out there. 30% of the current working population will get cancer while they work. If you're
That's pretty
Gen Z, it's
scary.
50%.
Yeah. Can you?
60% of people will have to end up caring for a cancer survivor and are at risk of losing their job.
Wow.
This is a national crisis.
Can you tell us a little bit about your military service and how you
Oh,
think that
okay.
has prepared you for a leadership role? If you win in Congress.
Okay. Number one, I think the Marines are fabulous, but I'm just going to be brutally honest with everybody. I was in the Marines in the 1980s, and there was a lot of sexual harassment and bullying and assault. This was right when women were integrating in. It has gotten a lot better. I am very concerned under the current Trump administration that we're going to backslide on how women are treated
Yeah, the
in the
treatment of women
military.
in general, we seem to be eroding everything from our health care protections to our rights to, I don't know if you heard Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, just tweeted out something about advocating for taking away women's right to vote. I mean, is this frightening or what?
Yes.
So one good way to prevent that, I guess, is more women in Congress who get to
More
vote
women
on
in
bills like that.
Congress, more women vets. And so I will be the strongest ally for our women who are currently serving and veterans. And I understand with the cuts to the VA, and we have to fix that too.
There you go.
But what was great about it is I went, every Marine Corps officer goes through infantry training. It was hard, but I survived it. I'm proud. And I also learned about leadership
Yeah.
that, and this is what I will bring to Congress. It is my job to serve you as a leader. It is not my job to tell you what to do. I serve you. I protect you. And that's always been something I've learned from the Marine Corps and I cherish and I will do if elected to Congress. I will serve. You're paying my salary besides that, but it is my obligation to serve you, not what some billionaire wants, not what the party wants. It is the constituents of the 48th.
There you go. Well, I would think that's what everybody would want. Suzanne, what else would you like our audience to know about you and your candidacy for the 48th Congressional District, which includes much of East County as well as much of North County? It's a big, sprawling district that I have not already asked you about.
I think right now, a lot of us, and we were talking about at this work with what's going on with the redistricting in Texas and the reaction of the redistricting. I'm very concerned about our country's democracy right now.
Yeah.
I am very concerned. Some people have felt like we have gone the point of no return on this, and that is one reason why I ran. Some people said you should wait till 2028, and I said I don't know if we'll have a 2028.
Yeah.
I grew up with my family hearing what Hitler did and hearing about fascism firsthand from Hitler and Stalin. Now, I'm not
Right.
saying we're there yet, but I grew up around this. And now I'm looking at my son, the grandparent of my mother, and her name is Omi in German, and what he could potentially be facing.
Yeah, the authoritarianism, I think, frightens so many people. The erosion of our rights, the efforts to restrict voting. I mean, we're seeing rolling back of things like the Voting Rights Act. Most rights that we thought were safe and enshrined forever are just being, taken away one after another. So I think that's a concern that a lot of people
This is
share.
the first time in history a president has actually asked for redistricting and says we're entitled to this. This is the first time in history
Well,
that
this is the
this has happened.
president that had, criminal convictions and who called up Georgia's Secretary of State last time around and said, "Can't you find me a bunch of these missing votes here?" That's unprecedented as well as,
Yeah, but
a lot of other
this
things.
is right now. What is going on? And this is not just a US crisis. The world is in crisis over
Yeah.
this.
Yeah.
The world is, because we were seen as the leaders of a free world and a democracy, and there's a lot of mistrust out there. And I don't know. I guess we ally with Vladimir Putin, but I don't want to be part of a country that allies with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Absolutely not, and I will not.
Suzanne, where can people get more information about you and your candidacy?
My website, very simple, www.suzannetill.com. The radio.
SuzannetillTill.com.
Send me an email. I usually try and handle those, personally at this point. We will be getting active on social media within a week or two. I have the other thing I wanted to talk about is young voters. I work with high school students. I work with college students. I love working with young people. This, again, is why I got into this election, is for the young people. For example, affordable housing.
Oh, yes,
Our
thank
kids
you.
are not moving out.
Yeah, we got sidetracked on that, but I definitely wanted to ask you what you wanted to do. I know you've said you want to increase affordable housing. I'd love to hear your ideas for doing that. I mean, we seem to hear none coming out of the current White House, where he's talking just
Nothing.
today about federalizing the police in Washington, D.C., and sending in the National Guard to do sweeps to clear out homeless people there, instead of talking about what could we be doing to make things more
Well, number
affordable
one,
so
there
people
is
don't become
legislation.
homeless.
There is already legislation there that could start this. 20 to 25% of California's housing is owned by multinational private equity hedge funds with no interest. Right now, the way the housing is set up, and this, and you know, you can follow it. It happened since 2008. Is now for multinational corporations. We also have a lot of people, foreign investors, especially from China, that are paying cash and buying up.
I want to jump in and just say that you're right. And I was shocked to learn this. And I learned it firsthand, really, because, my parents passed and I fixed up their house to put it on the market. And I must have had a half dozen calls every week from hedge fund companies and these kind of bottom feeding, corporations that wanted to snap up this house that they get the names off of, any place, all the different listings, I guess, where people have either a listing or where somebody has died and a property has changed hands within the family. And they try to snap these up at, bottom basement prices. And then they go in and they flip them. They do a really shoddy remodel usually, and then turn around and flip it and make as much profit as they possibly can. And this
They
is
also rent them out. They also don't sell them. And this
or
is
use them
not
as vacation
here
rentals.
in the United States. In Ireland, for example, this is a really big problem because Google moved in. That's one of the reasons. And so when we were walking in Dublin with my sister lives in Ireland, and we saw this beautiful home, and there was an advocacy group that put a flyer on the house and said, "Shame on you. This could have been a home for a family of four." And this is
Interesting.
what we have to understand. So there is some legislation on that, but also we have to think about how selling a house is set up, like in your situation. It is rigged for corporate investment.
It
It
is.
is
I think most
not
people would have
rigged.
taken the money and been done with it. I had a conscience and I just couldn't do it. I just told them no and said I'm going to put the
Right,
money
but
in,
not
fix it
everybody's you.
and sell it. But yeah, not everyone has the money to fix a house that may, need more fixes than you can afford to put it on the market. And so these predatory companies just come in and take advantage of people and drives the house of cost of housing through the roof in a market like California that already has housing inflation just because it's a desirable place to live,
Yeah,
So
it is rigged for corporate investors. We can't compete.
what would this legislation do and what would it take to get it passed?
One of the things that they had talked about was ban corporate investment. Now, there's also, of single family homes, like the one that you just sold, for example. I know there's legislation in California, but I bet you 10 bucks if they pass it, I think Trump, who is with the hedge funds and the private equity funds, will sue and mess with us. We
They will, and who knows what the courts will rule on, whether you can actually make it completely
We
illegal or not.
have to move forward. But this is just not only happening with homes. They are buying up hospitals and running them. They are
Nursing
buying
homes.
energy corporations. And did you know one of our sources of water in San Diego County is a desalination plant? There's a terrible contract with them. Every year, the price of water goes up. And that plant is owned by multinational investors in Europe.
Oh, gosh.
So it's a problem everywhere.
And that's a national security problem, really, when something essential for life like water, we're dependent on it, to a foreign country, even Europe, and certainly be even worse if it was a hostile ally, but or a
And
hostile,
this is where I work in a bipartisan way
opponent.
with my fellow Republicans. We in East County and in South County are absolutely opposed to that desal plant ripping us off. We are totally opposed. You know who's for it? The city of San Diego.
Sheesh.
And I am allied very strongly with my fellow Republicans on this. And that's the kind of congress member I will be. I don't care what your party is. If you're doing what's good for this country and what's for the 48th, I will work with you.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I want to take the time, Suzanne, to thank you very much for joining us. Folks, if you did tune in late today, we are speaking with Suzanne Till, who is a candidate, a Navy veteran, and a teacher running against Darrell Issa in the 48th Congressional District. She also has a degree in water and she serves on the Padre Dam District. I can never say that. The Padre Dam Municipal Water District Board. There you go. It's a mouthful. And if you want to know more about her, you can go to suzannetill.com. Suzanne, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is John Tidwell with a sports report. On August 13th, Padres fans celebrated the San Diego team moving into first place in the National League West. It happened after the Padres swept a three-game series against the San Francisco Giants, ending with an 11-1 crushing victory that put the Padres a full game ahead of the formerly first-place Los Angeles Dodgers. From August 15th through August 24th, the Padres have two series against the Dodgers and one against the third-place Giants, so it remains to be seen which team will emerge on top as the season draws closer to the playoffs. After a mid-season slump, the Padres have rediscovered their winning form and players are making a strong push for the postseason. Just before moving into first place, the team had won 8 of its last 10 games, went 17-8 after the All-Star break, and had a 5-game winning streak. The recent success is a testament to the Padres' improved play on both sides of the ball. On offense, key players such as third baseman Manny Machado and right fielder Fernando Tatis Jr. have been leading the charge. Machado, who is flirting with a .300 batting average, has a .359 on-base percentage and is leading the team with 20 home runs and 72 RBIs. Tatis has 17 home runs and 24 stolen bases with an on-base percentage of .366. Outfielder first baseman Gavin Sheets, a new addition to the Padres this season, has also provided significant offensive production, and with 15 home runs, has already surpassed his home run total from last season with the Chicago White Sox. The team also made some important additions at the trade deadline, bringing in players like Ryan O'Hearn, first baseman and designated hitter, as well as outfielder Ramon Laureano from the Baltimore Orioles, both of whom have provided a much-needed spark to the lineup. Pitching-wise, right-hander Nick Pivetta is 12-4 with a 2.87 earned run average and 144 strikeouts in just over 141 innings pitched. Right-hander Robert Suarez has been a dominant closer for the Padres, racking up 33 saves this season. As the Padres aspire to reach the playoffs and beyond, perhaps even winning the World Series for the first time in the team's history, Padres fans have plenty to cheer about.
This is Juliet Sanders with a public service announcement for the County of San Diego. Every animal deserves a loving home. This August, you can help make that happen. County Animal Services is waiving all pet adoption fees at the Bonita and Carlsbad Animal Shelters during the month of August for Clear the Shelters. Clear the Shelters is a nationwide initiative led by the NBC and Telemundo-owned TV stations to connect shelter animals with families ready to provide love, comfort, and care. Since 2015, the campaign has helped more than 1 million pets across the country find permanent homes. With shelters near capacity, this year's goal is to find a home for every adoptable animal. All pets adopted from county shelters come spayed or neutered, vaccinated, microchipped, and include 1-year license for dogs, free of charge, during August. From cats and dogs to guinea pigs and turtles, many animals are waiting to meet their match at County Animal Services, formerly Department of Animal Control. The website to view pets available for adoption is sddac.com, or visit the County Animal Services shelter in Bonita or Carlsbad. County of Animal Services promotes the humane and responsible care of pets and works to find foster homes as well as forever homes for each healthy and adoptable animal. The department partners with more than 300 rescue organizations and provides daily care for animals in need. But if you're not ready to adopt, fostering is another way to help. It gives animals time to adjust to a home environment and prepares them for adoption by socializing them with people and other pets. You can also support local animals in need by donating to the Spirit Fund. You can also support local animals in need by donating to the Spirit Fund, which provides free and often life-saving veterinary care for injured and sick pets at county shelters. You can also help by donating items from the County Animal Services wish list on Amazon or by volunteering your time to support the animals in our care. This August, help clear the shelters and give a homeless pet the second chance they deserve.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The
This is Juliet Sanders with the East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. Things are looking brighter for owners of homes with rooftop solar, who scored a victory in our court last week. California's Supreme Court sided with environmental groups in a case seen as pivotal for the proliferation of rooftop solar power in California. In a unanimous vote, justices told a lower court to revisit a ruling that upheld reduced payments to solar panel owners for selling excess power back to utility companies, CalMatters reports. Justices did not rule out whether the changes to the solar program were legal, requiring the Court of Appeals to determine this. Bernadette Del Chiaro, vice president for California at the Environmental Working Group, said that the lower court punted on these issues of solar payments, adding, "I do think they're clearly stating this needs to be reviewed." At issue is a 2022 decision by state regulators to reduce by about 75% payments to solar panel owners who produced excess power. The change was intended to help make bills affordable for all customers while still encouraging the adoption of renewable energy sources. Three environmental groups that brought the lawsuit, the Center for Biological Diversity, the Protect Our Communities Foundation in San Diego's East County, and the California Environmental Working Group, argued in the case that the State Utilities Commission's decision left out crucial considerations around benefits to customers and disadvantaged communities. Roger Lynn, senior attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, says California doesn't need to be in an affordability crisis if we have more local solar power generation. Utilities pay solar panel owners for the excess power under a program known as net energy metering. In previous iterations of the program, utilities paid solar customers a retail rate for their extra energy, which is the same price the utilities charge other customers when they resell that energy. This was changed under the current iteration of the program, which instead gives customers the avoided cost, which is how much utilities save by not buying the power back on the wholesale market. Customers who joined the program after mid-April 2023 received the new rate, while customers under the prior two versions will continue to receive the old rate for the duration of their contracts, which is typically about 20 years. Utility commissioners ruled in favor of power companies, which argued that older versions of the program created an unfair cost burden on customers. Those without rooftop solar, utilities said, have to pay more than their peers for routine maintenance to the grid. The groups bringing the lawsuit say that this idea is overblown. A court of appeals upheld the regulator's decision, relying on a legal standard that gives significant deference to decisions made by the California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC. But now the state Supreme Court's decision finds that the Court of Appeals erred by using this standard. Whether or not the change in how solar panel owners are paid is legal will be left to the lower courts. But the decisions this week could have farther-reaching implications for state utility regulators. Terry Prosper, Utility Commission spokesperson, says, "We appreciate the court's careful attention to the appropriate standard of deference for reviewing CPUC decisions," adding that, "We are pleased that CPUC's decision will remain in effect as an important part of controlling electricity bills." Advocates said the decision reinforces that the Utilities Commission must ensure that its decisions fit squarely within the law. Del Chiaro, with the California Environmental Working Group, concludes, "For too long, they really have operated in a black box behind a shroud of complexity. Consumers and the planet have consistently lost out as a result of that."
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Dusty Summer Road, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.